welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. This is episode 33. Today is Monday, January 14th, 2013. My name is Rob. With me today is, as usual, my buddy Jason.
Hey, Rob. It's funny, when you did it that way, I thought you were going to say someone else. I thought it was going to be an insult, and you were nice to me.
Well, I'm always nice. I'm a nice person. You're the one who's a jerk all the time.
It's true.
All the time. Yeah, how's it going?
It's going pretty well.
Good. Yeah, what's new? Been a long time.
It's It has.
Not that long, really.
Yeah, you're making that up.
I know.
It's been like a week.
Yeah.
But we haven't really hung out that much lately. Mm-mm. We've recorded, but we haven't really
Yeah, we've been busy.
So, so there's that. But not a lot going on with me, not a lot new.
Okay.
Just working on some stuff.
Working on some stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's, stuff is good. Stuff is good. What you been playing?
Recently I played a game, this is about a week ago. I got to play a game I haven't played in a while. It's not a game that I'm really endeared with or anything like that, but it's a fast game we play. It's called Sequence. You heard of Sequence? Mm-mm. So basically Sequence is, there's a board, and on the board are cards, painted on the board. They're, in a grid, like playing cards, like the Ace of Spades and that. And you've got cards in your hand that you draw that match these cards. And you've got these little chips you play. And you're trying to play the card. So if I play a King of Spades, then there are two Kings of Spades on the board, and I can decide where I want to put my chip.
Okay.
And the goal is to get five in a row. And the way we play with teams, the goal is to get five in a row twice.
Hmm.
So here's what I don't like about the game.
Okay.
I don't like that the game is pretty much just random. There's no real overarching strategy because you've drawn these cards, right? At random.
Mm-hmm.
You have to determine how to play them, but the whole game really works on you've drawn these cards at random. And it's not like the cards have specific actions or something. I mean, it's play a chip on this card. The only choice you have is which one to play. And if there's two on the board, choose which one you want to play. That said, I do have a good time playing the game. It's because I'm with friends and stuff.
Sure.
But it's never a game I would seek out to like, oh, we're going to play Sequence.
It's just kind of easy and comfortable. And
yeah. You know what I mean? When the other team wins, you're kind of like, nah, I mean, could have been us, could have been them.
Yeah. Didn't really have a lot of input on that outcome.
Right. And I mean, obviously, most games, there's a lot of randomness involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, your goal as to win the game is to get rid of, to marginalize as much of that randomness as possible by making good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But with a game like that, you have to make really terrible decisions to not be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Or really amazing decisions to be super good at it. I guess that the one strategy piece they have is two-eyed jacks you can play anywhere. I play a two-eyed jack, I can put my little chip on anything. One-eyed jacks, I can remove a chip from anything, one of mine or one of theirs. Removing one of your own is stupid. But, you know, I guess if they had more wild cards, that would be kind of cool. But
yeah.
There's not. There's two decks in there, right? So there's 8 jacks out of 104 cards.
Yeah. That's stinky.
Yeah. I mean, it's less than 10%, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe it was like jacks allow you to put stuff on and queens allow you to take it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you've got 16 cards.
Yeah.
So roughly 16%.
Mm-hmm.
That would feel a little better, I think, but whatever. I mean,
sure.
We enjoy playing the game, kind of.
It's a ringing endorsement, man. Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not dogging any designer. It's a mass market game, so it's not like it's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's corporate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Corporate.
The man.
What about you, sir?
Yeah, you know, I neglected to mention this on our last episode when we were talking about Christmas stuff, but my sister-in-law did buy us a few games for Christmas, 3 of them, actually. I like to talk about one of them. I'll mention them all. These are the kinds of games that I wouldn't normally buy myself. We talked about that before. That, you know, when you go to Target, you look at games, and it never occurs to me to look at games at Target, you know?
Right.
Yeah, these are the kinds of games, the more mass market stuff that you'd see at Target. You know, kind of party games, you know, very, very kind of low stakes. One is a little dice game called Farkle. which it seems to be kind of a push or luck kind of dice game, trying to get points. So that's cool. Another one is a party game called Name Five, and it's similar to the style of game that we talked about with Cardboard Edison. You know, their game.
Oh, Scufimisms?
Yeah, right. So the kind of idea is it says, you know, name five. So you draw a card and it says, can you name five purple foods? Can you name five breakfast cereals? Can you name five superheroes? And then, and it's a party game, and somebody, if they can name five, they get a point and they move along the board, you know. So, and I haven't played, had a chance to play any of these yet, but, you know, it's just kind of a fun, silly party game.
Is there someone that exists in this world who plays party games who can't name five superheroes? I'm just curious. I'm concerned about that person.
Well, if you have alcohol going with you in your system, it might be difficult.
I mean, but there's free, right?
Well, right, but there's stuff on here like, okay, college bowl games. I don't know or care about sports.
I know nothing about football.
I could not name five college bowl games.
However, Rose Bowl. Okay.
Rose
okay.
Bowl. See?
No. There's that one in Hawaii, the Aloha Bowl, maybe.
I don't know if you're right or wrong.
The Hawaii Bowl.
You could just make stuff up at this point. I wouldn't even know if you're lying. That's kind of the thing.
The New York Bowl.
Uh-huh.
I made that up. Pretty sure there isn't one. But I know about the Rose Bowl.
Okay, that's so you can't even make up five.
I could make up five if I wanted to. The San Antonio Bowl, the Desert Bowl.
How about five TV dads?
Oh, easy. Okay. Five TV dads. Bill Cosby. Do you want their real names or do you want their...
I think the character names. They're on their TV.
Heathcliff Huxtable. Dan Connor.
Who's that?
The dad from Roseanne, dude. One of the greatest dads ever.
I never watched Roseanne.
Jack Bristow.
I'm opening this box now so that I can start reading some of these to you.
Jack Bristow was Sidney Bristow's dad on Alias.
Never watched that.
You know, actually, what's so difficult is just trying... Christian Shepherd.
Oh, I love that sound.
That was the board game opening.
Yeah.
Christian Shepherd was Jack Shepherd's father on Lost. And for the win... Oh, there's a lot of thinking.
Sand timer. It's got a sand timer. Hey.
Oh, sweet. You like sand? Oh, that's what makes it harder. Is there
a
sand timer?
There's a time limit. Yeah.
So fifth TV dad. Oh, mm-hmm. I feel like I got to do this now. My head is just swimming with TV shows. Oh, Seaver, Jason Seaver.
Okay.
From Growing Pains, from Growing Pains. I was going to say Family Ties.
Okay.
You're really going to read these?
Oh, well, I'll read you one more. We'll do the sand timer.
Okay.
This is a live unboxing of an unplayed
game. Try and find a good one, though, to make it fun.
I won't just pick it at random, yeah. This is a live unboxing on the podcast.
Wow.
Right here. You can
hear me.
You
been playing right now during the show, Rob?
I'd
go the other way with that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's going to drain faster that way. All right.
Is this a team game?
I don't know.
Now, are there things... How do you know if the person got it right or not?
I guess you just kind of have to trust the rest of the team. The rest of the group.
I could totally snow that bowl one that I would just pretend to know. All right, it's ready.
Okay.
You find one?
Yeah, this is just like the first one I looked at. Okay.
Okay, so what do you got? The sand timer's prepped?
Sand timer's prepped. Okay, every card has five colors on it with five different options, okay? So I'll let you pick a color to start with, okay? We have red, yellow, green, blue, and purple.
Do the colors mean something?
I have no idea. I haven't read the instructions.
Green.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
This is probably going to be pretty easy. Okay, name, and you have the sand timer. I think this is probably a minute timer.
It looks like it.
Okay. Name five guests who have been on Oprah.
Oh, my gosh. Tom Cruise, because he did that stupid jumping thing.
Okay.
This is really difficult. Five people who've been on Oprah? I don't watch Oprah. I mean, I guess I could just randomly name celebrities. Katie Holmes. I give up, dude. I don't know. This is really difficult. Oprah? Really? Give me another one. Come on.
And time. You lose. Bance. All right. Let's do, okay. Red, yellow, green, blue, purple.
Blue.
Name five Republicans. Go.
This is really difficult. Bob Dole, Mitt Romney, George Bush, George H.W. Bush. That's at four?
It's four.
And, it gets more difficult as it goes back in time, doesn't it? Oh, Dan Quayle.
Okay, very good. Very good. Let's do one more.
Listeners, I really hope you're enjoying this. You're not just rolling your eyes.
This is dumb. All right. Stand timer's out. You ready?
Yep.
Red, yellow, green, blue, or purple?
Yellow.
Okay. Ready. Name five oblong-shaped foods.
Define oblong? No. Oblong meaning like...
Meaning not round.
Not round. Hot dogs. A slice of pizza.
No.
A McRib sandwich. A sub sandwich.
Those are ovals. Okay, all right.
No, they're not.
All right, go.
Pretzel rods.
That's cylindrical.
Cheese sticks.
No, you fail. No. Like, you want, like, hot dog's good because the hot dog is, like, curve, you know? How about a banana? How about an eggplant? You know, this is the kind of stuff you should be thinking of. Okay. Oblong. All right, anyway. So, all right, so we've already got some enjoyment out of name five, so that's a win.
I would certainly try that game. Looks like it's Game Right. Who makes it?
Yeah, no. I think so. Is it?
No, I think I'm looking at a different box.
No, it's Endless Games.
Endless Games. Okay, I haven't heard that before. So, interesting.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's neat.
It would be a fun party game going back and forth.
Yeah.
It would be better if you had a team so that you could cover the subject you don't know.
And maybe it is team game. I don't know. I should read the rules to be sure.
Or if you knew what the colors meant.
Yeah. You know, there's a die to roll. Maybe you're supposed to roll a die and a number corresponds with one of the five colors. And if you get a six, you can pick whatever you want. I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, but that's not the game that I wanted to talk about. That was fun. The game I want to talk about was called Flip Out.
Hey, and this is the one made by Game Right Games.
Game Right. Yeah. And Game Right did Forbidden Island.
Yeah, Game Right. I mean, Game Right's a big guy. They do a lot.
And they did that Three for a Crime game that you talked about not too long ago.
Yes.
Yeah. But this game, Flip Out, I read a thing in the instructions saying it's licensed from some other publisher, originally called Patchwork. And it's a card game. But there's nothing on the cards. The cards just have colored designs on them. Okay, and there's what is there? There's we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different patterns, different designs on them. Okay, and some of them have the same pattern on both sides, and some of them have different patterns on either side. And the idea is that every player has six cards in their hand. Okay, and you can see the six cards that you have these six cards in your hand, and you can see the side facing you, but you cannot see the side facing your opponent. All right.
Okay.
And so what you can do on your turn, so you have to hold them up. And actually, this version of the game has like these plastic stands that you set up where you actually put the cards in the stands. So it's set on your desktop. So, a little more kid friendly that way, I think, was kind of probably one of the reasons for republishing. But you could easily just hold these in your hand. And the goal of the game is to get five matching colors. So I just grabbed six matching of the same color, your whole hand matching, right? And you get points for that. And I just grabbed stuff right off the top, you know, but so I have six yellows here, but I don't know what's on the other side of these cards, but Jason knows, and Jason then can say, okay, on my turn, what I want to do here is I want to trade. I want to steal a card from Rob and give me one of his. And when Jason takes one of my cards, he can't turn it around and look at what I saw. All he can do is keep looking at the side that's to him.
Interesting.
So it's this idea of, I think it's up to five players, and you're just basically kind of passing cards back and forth. So sometimes you have the option, you can discard one and draw a new one from the deck, because you can see what's on the top, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to if I'm going to pick something up off the deck, I can't use the side that's up, I have to use the side that's down, and keep that secret to myself so nobody else knows what that is.
Oh, so... But then you, in that case, you do get to see what was on the card for a second.
Right.
So but then you don't know afterwards.
Right.
Okay.
Once it shuffles down between
people's
hands. Like
memory style.
Yeah. It's kind of a neat idea. And I've never seen anything quite like that before, you know, where the idea that, card games, generally, they have text on them, right, on the cards that tell you to do things and give you abilities and powers and actions. And this has none of that. This game is purely about what you know and what you don't know, and, you know, taking a risk. and not knowing what your opponent has, and they don't know what you have, but you can try and kind of guess at that side. So it's kind of a neat thing. It's a game that is 100% player interaction, you know? It's 100% take that kind of stuff, you know? That's the whole game. So I thought that was kind of a neat idea. And I look forward to giving this a try sometime.
Yeah.
So very, very different. That was kind of, I might as well go ahead and roll this into our mechanic of the week, if that's cool with you.
Works for me.
You know, this idea here of cards with no information on them, or just base, you know, only one piece of information, in this case, a color.
Right.
You know, and I've never seen a game that does it before, and that's really intriguing to me, and I think that's a very, very cool idea. So I don't know if you've ever seen anything that's done that before.
You know, I haven't played it, but Flowerfall, does that have words on the cards?
Oh, that's a good point. No, there's no words. It's just simply colors. There's more information on the card than just a color, but yeah, it's a very simple approach to it. Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Other than that, no, I can't think of a game off the top of my head where, you know, where you're just dealing with a solid color and no other information.
Yeah, and I guess I should say there's two pieces of information because there's one color on each side.
Right, but you only are privy to one
exactly
at any given time.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I thought that was really cool, neat and different. And so, you know, it has me thinking about if I was going to try and do something, like, you know, what could you do with that? Because having that kind of limited information requires you to put the onus on the players to interact with each other to make the game exciting, make the game interesting. But you also have to give them rules which kind of hem them in, you know?
Right. Yeah, I guess I was thinking one major bonus is, you know, you translate your rules into whatever language and the game pretty much works.
Yeah.
Unless you're colorblind and the game pretty much sucks.
Well, that's why when they say is that these, not only do they have colors, but they have patterns on them that are different.
Oh, you know? So if you're colorblind, the pattern would still...
Yeah, you can still match patterns, yeah.
Well played game, right? Well played.
But yeah. No, it's very universal. It's very approachable, you know?
Oh, I think definitely.
It's cool. It's very cool.
That's a game you could pick up and be playing in 2 minutes, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, gosh. Oh, how do you write rules for a game that has no information on the cards? That's...
Or if you don't keep it at just to, like, zero information, what if you put it at just, like, a number? Like, Lost Cities is a good example of that.
Yeah. Well, Lost Cities, you have two pieces of information, a number and a color.
That's true, yeah.
Here's one, dominoes.
Oh, yeah.
Dominoes are a lot like that. You have a number, you have two options, but, I mean, you have a number that you have to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, limited information, text-free.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No text explaining to you how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, typically board games, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
The board's going to have a lot of texty information on it, or or symbols that mean something for text.
Yeah,
you know, I guess what you're talking about is something where it's not specific. You know, that it doesn't have to. You know, if you're just trying to match. I mean, I guess that's probably why this game was kind of low hanging fruit, right? I mean, making a matching colors game with just colors on the card is pretty easy.
Sure.
What if you were? This may be getting away from what you're trying to go for here, but. You know, if you were trying to make a game where you were remember the old game Pipe Dream for the NES,
yeah.
If you were playing maybe Game Boy something, you're trying to make like a pipe go,
yeah, and fluid is goo or slime or something.
I mean, you could easily have you know no text on the cards and just you know, just the picture. You're just matching the pictures to make the chain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
there was an old game that we had when I was a kid. It was a Rubik's game, you know, like Rubik's Cube. It was called Rubik's Tangle, and it was just a stack of tiles, so square tiles, and they had printing on both sides, and they were it had the same design on every side, the same you know the same image, but with different colors. And what it was a series of ropes, ropes that would. You know, would come in from one side of the tile and exit on the other side. And sometimes they would curve to a corner. Sometimes they go across. Sometimes they loop around. And I think there were four or five different colors that could be on these different colored ropes. And the idea is that you're trying to put these tiles down into, I think it was a 5x5 square. Five tiles right. on the side. Yeah. And you had to put them together. It was a puzzle to put them together so that all the colors matched. You know, so you never had any colors against each other. So it was continuous colored ropes the whole way through. And we had that as kids, and we never solved it, ever. Because those tiles were also, like I said, double-sided. You know? And if you completed the puzzle on one side, it's not like you completed the puzzle on the other side, too.
Wow, that's that's depressing. Did your parents tell you you were second winners?
Nice.
In case you haven't listened to the old version of the show back in the day, Rob said at his house, they had first winner and second winner.
Yeah, no, that was when we were really little.
Right.
No, we were all losers in this game because not a single one of us ever figured it out.
Tied for first.
Well, tied for last in that case. So that was another example of a game. And like I said, it's more of a puzzle than a game. But, where it was all the information was just simply design, just imagery. And it wasn't text, it wasn't that kind of stuff. So I guess more of a puzzle than anything else. So maybe that's not a good example. But at any rate.
But, I mean, when you're trying to match patterns and that kind of thing,
yeah,
basically it is a puzzle that you're talking about.
You know, another game that we've encountered that has the similar concept was Chip Ove's Standing in Line game. You know, every card just had one image on it, and you were wagering against each other
and a number.
Well, but the number is just reminding you of how many of each of those
were in the deck.
Yeah, so the number wasn't even key to the idea. And so you were wagering based on how soon was the next one of those going to come up.
Right.
You know, and that was actually another interesting way to approach that idea of just really simple, basic information. And the fun comes in the gameplay and the rules and interacting with the other person.
So I think for a game like this that you're going to try and use this, you need simple rules.
Very simple rules.
With no, you know, so many card games, as we've talked about before, the point is the rules are general, and they give kind of a nice structure, and then the cards manipulate that structure and break those rules.
Yeah. That's kind of the standard way to cut, a game based on exceptions to one rule.
This basically just takes that and throws it in the garbage.
Yeah.
And says no.
You follow the rules, period.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you lose, and maybe you still lose if you follow the rules.
Yeah, it's possible. So I don't know. It's neat. It's neat. And I like kind of getting exposed. I didn't even expect to be, we just opened this on Christmas morning. But to be exposed to these different ways to come at this stuff. And it just reminds me that there's always a new way to approach a game, a game idea, or this, all this. It's exciting. It's fun.
Yeah,
I mean, discovering new things like this.
I certainly am having a hard time imagining designing a game like that. It was one episode we talked about designing games with no theme.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounds terrifying to me. And this is kind of like that. Because you're basically designing a game with no mechanics. I mean, there are mechanics, but. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like you're designing a game with no mechanics.
Yeah, and what's even more interesting is that this version is called Flip Out, but like I said, it was originally called Patchwork, and so it makes me think that this was a game that the theme was, making a quilt, That it seems like they originally put a theme onto it like that, and when Game Right took it over, it's almost like they pulled that out, and they said, no, we don't need a theme, it just needs to be colorful and fun. That's all the theme we need, because the good part of it is in the gameplay and in the interaction with people. With the other players.
See, and I think I would be more excited about it if it had a theme like Patchwork, even though, I mean, quilting doesn't sound like a great theme to me.
Yeah.
I think it sounds more exciting with a theme like that, personally.
Well, a theme, I'll tell you, I would never have picked this up off the shelf and bought it myself.
Right.
Probably because it just looks like a mass market party game, but I think pretty clearly it's going to be more than just a mass market party game. I think it has potential to be something pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I would be really interested to see how it plays.
Yeah. At any rate, okay, so moving on. We should practice your pitch here. I think it's time.
Okay.
And you made a promise to me last week.
I did.
You did. You did. You made a big promise.
I said that, so last week, you want to just give a quick recap of what you talked about last week?
Last week I introduced this idea of this offset card system, this OSC system, and you probably noticed, if you went and checked the show notes, that I, after that we recorded the show, we talked about it and kind of felt like I should kind of draw something up, something to post on the website so that you could see an example of what these cards would look like. So if you haven't seen that on the website, and if you're curious about this, go back and check the show notes for episode 32, and you can see an image. But the idea here is that this offset card system, where each card is split into two halves, and in order to play one card, you actually have to put two cards down and put those two halves next to each other to make one complete action.
Right.
And my game was called Splitters, and this idea of steampunk computer hackers hacking the flow of steam in their difference engines, and by putting these two things together, that's called a split to change the flow of steam and hack the steam computer. So Jason said he is going to try and come at this and make it come up with an idea using this offset card idea, this offset system.
Right. So I picked a couple things to try and go with here. I decided, obviously, I'm going to use the offset cards because that's kind of the point of the whole thing. But you were using a small version of a board.
Yeah.
And I did mention that I kind of had a thought for that.
Mine was mainly just a point tracker, but also we worked it out. So it would also be useful to kind of some status changes as the game grows.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that should work really well for that.
I think so. Yeah.
So I thought I would try and put a miniature board in there too. Like I'm thinking 8x8 inches wise, maybe up to 10. We'll see. It really would just depend on how it would fit in a box.
Sure.
And you know, what's available. So I've got that. And then I also thought, well, I might as well stick with your theme, you know, with the steampunk theme. Okay. I'm a fan of steampunk. I mean, we both are. So yeah. I thought, well, let's kind of try and stay in Rob's world here that he's talking about with these splitters. So, yeah. So based on that, but then I said, I want to make a game that's nothing like what Rob designed. because I want to kind of test your idea for this system, right?
Yeah, right.
Can I use the same card system and make the game that's different, but works just as well with it, or yeah, you know, maybe better. We'll see.
Well, we'll see.
So
it's a tall order.
and I've told you this before. I've been throwing around an idea off and on that I wanted to try and figure out some sort of fighting game, like a cage fighting game specifically, like just a Rumble in the Bronx style game. And I thought, well, hey, that's a lot different than hacking. So
oh, boy, is it. Yeah.
So let's try to design a game in this system about people fighting. And I thought, okay, so I want to figure out how to use the cards, the choice of being able to use one side of the card or the other when you match it up. So what I came up with was a game I'm going to call for now Augmenters. It's a fighting game, and it involves these people who are in a ring, a cage, fighting, and as they fight, they're augmenting their bodies with steampunk gear. Whether it's like a steampunk arm or a steampunk legs or goggles or what have you. And throughout the game, they can move around this grid, which is on the game board. They move around this game board trying to kill one another. And while they're doing this, actions they do help them build up augment points or steam points, or not exactly sure what I'll call them at this point. But what it allows them to do is then they've got the card, right? So they've got the two-part card.
Yeah.
One half of the card is a normal action. The other half of the card is an augmented action. So earlier in the game, you're playing a lot of normal actions, a punch, a kick. Maybe you've got a weapon, you've got a gun, you can use that. But when the real meat, the real things you can do to your opponent revolve around being able to use these augmented powers. So that's where, you know, you've got the cards. So early in the game, you want to try and save, theoretically, right, the cards that are good for augmenting for later. But you can only have so many cards in your hand at any given time. Probably 7-ish, we'll say. 5 to 7. Not 100% set on that. I want it to be an odd number because then they don't all match, so there's no way for you to plan. It's not, if it's an even number, you can say, well, I have these three sets. You know, in your game, you call them splits. Mine are kind of augments, I guess.
Sure.
So, game starts, you're on this grid, and you start at certain points. Everyone has the same character. There's no differences in the people. Everybody has a set amount of hit points. I'm not going to say for sure what that is. I'm thinking 20, just because, hey, 20-sided die takes care of that real well. Sure. But there would also be some room, I believe, on the outside of the board to track, have a tracker for hit points and also to have a tracker for your steam points that you've got or your augment points, whatever we end up calling them. So that would be an easy way to, on the edges of the board, to do that. But it depends too, because I'm thinking 2 to 4 players might be fun. So it's not just, doesn't have to just be a duel.
Yeah.
So you've got your augmenter guys. They're in there. They're ready to fight. Go. Time to fight. So on your turn, you can attack. You can, everyone, you can always move, right? Mm-hmm. You always have the ability to move. Then you have to kind of spend your actions. I'm not sure. I'm thinking 2 to 3 actions you would get per turn. An action could be picking up a weapon off the ground. It could be attacking your opponent. It could be playing an augment on yourself into mm-hmm. play. So.
Okay.
Were you going to say something?
So by this, the idea of putting the two cards together, one half of that is going to be the attack card, and the other half of that is going to be the weapon card. So the weapon you're attacking with.
Right.
Got it.
So, and some attacks are only available for augmented weapons.
Uh-huh.
So that way, you know, if you're looking at a card and on one side it's got a punch and on the other side it's got a steampunk arm punch,
mm-hmm.
it would not be that specific, but that type of thing. You know, you have to have that, an augment like that, to be able to do that attack.
Okay.
And like I said, that's really where the meat is. If you can't do that, then you're not going to, you know, you're not going to be able to get rid of your opponent. You've got to be able to build up that better stuff for you. Now, at 4 places on the board, 4 specific places, weapons are going to appear randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And not randomly. So what'll happen is there's a deck of weapon cards. Now these are offset cards too. So what would happen is around the board there'd be 4 spots. Like I said, so when each spot was filled with a weapon, it would then move to the next one. So there's spot A, we'll say. So I flip over the first weapon and it's now sitting there on the board. So I can somebody can go pick that up. And on the next person's turn, slot B gets one. And these are all spread out around the board, equidistant from one another, to make them hard to get to. Then slot C, then slot D. Now, if we get back to slot A and there's still something there, we're going to skip. It's going to move then to slot B. And it's just going to keep going around, because the idea is that you're going to be burning through these weapons. Your standard weapons, you're going to pick them up, you're going to use them, they're going to be done. So you're going to have to be, and then that same time, you'll be, of course, drawing your normal cards, just like always. I'm also thinking that I want to have a way to put traps on the board. Now, I'm not... So this is something you need a little help with.
Okay.
Because I want the gameplay to feel dynamic. I don't want it to just feel like we're punching and kicking each other. I want it to feel like we're running around in this thing, trying to screw each other over. You know what I mean? Trying to really use these special powers we have and abilities from the steampunk stuff to do cool things, not just... let's have a gunfight or let's have a fist fight. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I want it to be a unique experience.
Sure.
So traps are one thing that I'm thinking of adding. Now, one other thing I want to highlight is the floor. And I really like this, and I hope that it can work. You know, there's the board's not huge, but if they're half-inch squares on a 8-inch board, we'll say, and 6 inches of the board is playing area, right, and the rest is for tracking, then you'd have... 12 by 12.
Right.
So 12 by 12 is 144 squares, I think is correct.
Sure.
12 times 12. So you've got a lot of squares on this board you can maneuver through.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be cool if the floor in different areas was made up of different things. Like in some sections, there's like wood floor, right? In other, there's brass pipes. In other, there's steel pipes.
Mm-hmm.
In other, there's glass floor, right? So the floor is kind of like a patchwork of these different things. They mean it would make sense with the art. Like the pipe is flowing through here, right?
Sure.
But it would allow you to do things like, and I think traps could work this way, but also weapons could easily work this way as well. So I've got this like Tesla gun, right? So if I drop the Tesla gun, if I shoot it into the brass, now anyone standing on brass is going to take damage that turn because I just got them, right?
Okay.
Or for wood, it could be fire. Like if I set it on fire, boom, now all the wood's on fire for that turn, just for that turn. So, you know, you would basically be, I'm standing on wood adjacent to this brass square. Boom, I electrocute the brass square. You're standing on a brass square. Now you're going to take damage. Am I making any sense here?
Yeah, I'm with you.
So I guess one way I thought I could do traps that would be not very player interactive would be simple, and that could just be that
they're always in place, or,
well, I mean, you could do one in just one standard spot, but then just like don't go there, right?
Yeah.
So they could be global. You could flip a trap over and it could say, boom, oh, this trap has flipped over. So that means anyone standing on wood is going to take damage, or anyone that steps to a wood square is going to take damage. I'm not a huge fan of that just because it's so global, right? Because, you know, if there's only five types of things, you got a 1 in 5 chance of always being on something that's going to be trapped, which, I don't know, kind of sounds like a pain in the butt. One idea I have for how you could play traps is you could play traps on the board with little wooden tokens. So you're playing them into different spaces on the board. Well, that could be one of the augments you can do. Like, you can choose to play a trap on the board. And the trap is faceless. It doesn't matter what it is. And if you step on it, you're going to get hit too. But when someone steps on it, then you flip over a trap card. So if you're being strategic, you could be dropping traps around weapons. You could be dropping traps in places to where they're going to have to cross the path to get to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In addition, I like the idea that you can force opponents to be knocked back or moved with certain augments. So it says, if I attack you with this augment, you're going to move 2 squares, however I tell you to. Obviously, the text would be very heavy on the cards. And I think that I would still use some of the ideas like you had with the, where the brass fittings would work best with brass fittings, as opposed to like if I was taking a brass weapon and hooking it to a wood thing, you know, that kind of thing would be,
Okay.
I'm just looking at my notes here to kind of double check to make sure I'm hitting the high points. I mean, is it making sense so far?
Yeah. I'm not sure that I'm seeing where the combining of the cards together is happening.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's where I'm a little lost, because you said that you're going to combine an attack with a weapon, but you're not going to start the game with a weapon. You have to go get a weapon. So in the time before that, what are you starting with? You know, what are your...
My bad. One of the things I did think was you could get dealt... either A. There's two ways to do it. One, you could start and there's a weapon in every slot on the board. And you just got to go for it, right?
Okay.
Like, so turn one, go for it. Or start of every game, each person gets 2 random weapon cards to put with their,
in their hands. Okay.
And if they can play an augment for those, like, I mean, not an augment, if they can play a match for those, they can set them down. Okay. And they could be, you know, I mean, I don't want it to be difficult to match cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want you drawing from one random deck and another random deck to try and match two things. I mean, what a pain in the butt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just don't want it to get too difficult. So I guess what I'm thinking is your weapons deck has 2 weapons on it. Each card has 2 weapons, an augmented one and a non-augmented one. And when you drop that down, you're matching it to an attack power, which is either an augmented one or a non-augmented one, based on, you know, how many of these augment points or steam points that you've accumulated over the time.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to spend those points in order to play an augment.
Correct.
Okay. And if you're putting 2 augments together, you're going to spend that many more points.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but those augments could be very powerful and allow you to, you know, take less damage or do more damage. And the idea is that as you get damaged, augments would leave play. I'm a little fuzzy on how that would work, because I don't want to have like a tableau or something for your character. You know what I mean? Where you like taking damage here
and
there.
I'd like to locations
not,
and
right. I'd like to not do that. So I think it would just have to be in the cards. Like it would just say this removes 1 augment of the attacker's choice or 1 augment of the defender's choice.
Sure.
Or the player can take extra damage and keep an augment, or it can say, you know, when you get hit with this attack, you can choose to take 1 damage instead of 2 damage and drop your augment.
Yeah.
So basically, like, you're taking it in the steampunk foot or something.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So I'm going to be honest right now, because, I mean, I only had this last week to come up with this.
Yeah, sure.
It's a little slim on specific details, hardcore details. But it's because I really want... I want to find a way to make it very unique and replayable.
Yeah.
Because with just a standard fighting game, it's really easy for that not to be replayable. And we've tried some, and that's been a common theme with those is that they haven't been replayable.
Right. And so you would have like a, probably not a mini, but a token that represents your character moving around the board.
Correct.
So it's like you have a move and two actions, or a move and three actions, and you can do those things in any order you want. Now, in splitters, I was saying you have two actions, but in order to put down two cards to play a split, that requires both actions. In yours, would one card be one action, and one, or would it be one action is to play a combo out there? Or
I was thinking the same as you, as in to put two cards together was two actions. But if you have three actions, say, attacking would always be one action.
Oh, okay. So playing the card is not the attack. Putting the cards down makes that available to you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then you can choose what to do. So if I get a couple weapons out there, right?
Yeah.
I could cycle through those on a turn and try and go all out attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make more sense then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want the players to have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
In, you know, a small little board, but they've got a lot of choices for what they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird. Sometimes, you know, you come into a pitch and I'm like, oh, I feel really good about this game. And as we talk about it, like I see some glaring issues with it that bother me.
No, we've both done that before.
So
that experience before, yeah.
So it's just determining, you know, how do I?
Mm-hmm.
I guess what it is it's defining the rules a little more clearly, making a prototype of said rules in the game, and then just giving it a try.
Yeah, and I think mine is a little closer to prototype than yours. It sounds like
yes, I agree.
But I've been thinking about mine a lot longer.
Right.
Yeah.
That is very
true.
So
that makes sense. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. No, that sounds like, like you said, it's totally different from mine, different style of game, using the same kind of basic features.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. I'm with you. Augmenters. Splitters and augmenters.
Yes. So in the semi-near future, we're both going to try and prototype these games and see if they sink or swim.
I think we got something here.
Yeah. So.
The offset card system, the OSC system.
Tell your friends.
Get excited, kids, because it's happening.
Possibly someday. Maybe.
we're gonna work towards that at least.
Yeah. That's the plan.
Yeah, we like this. We're gonna see where we can go with this.
Yeah, and I mean I'm not against exploring other options too within this to see if I you know, because you know how we both are. We're always coming up with new ideas for pitches. And tying those in with something like this, you know, would be cool.
Yeah, it would be very fun, yeah.
Kind of a predetermined rule set to just say, you know, let's try that structure and see how it works.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want it to be too structured.
No.
You know,
no.
Because that's limiting and can cause trouble. But you know, to try and fit yourself in with... to try and fit into some basic guidelines is kind of a design challenge and forces you to be creative within those limitations.
Correct.
You know, and try and find different ways to come at that, which is healthy, I think.
Yeah. I think that kind of makes you flex different muscles in the brain.
Right. And when we're still both being so new at this and still learning our process, you know, it's healthy for us. But yeah, good stuff, man.
All right.
I think we should move on.
Yes.
I have one plug here.
Yes.
By the time the show posts, this Kickstarter will be at its tail end. It's a Kickstarter project. The Kickstarter is for a game called Pivot, P-I-V-I-T, Pivot. And it's a game by some guys in California. And it's a cool idea. It's a really simple, basic game, kind of inspired by simple things like Go is something they reference in their video. Go and chess and checkers.
Well, watching the gameplay, it very reminds me of checkers and chess kind of mixed.
Yeah. Where you have simple pieces that have simple actions that they can do, and the game just explodes in complexity and strategy. So you have these pieces that are double-sided, and pieces can move along a checkerboard only in one direction based on which way they're oriented. And then depending on which side of the token is flipped up, gives those pieces different powers. And I encourage you just to go watch the video. It's a neat thing. I'll be honest with you. I don't think they're going to make their goal. I mean, there's always a big push in the end of these things, but I think these guys probably came at this project in the wrong way. Looks like they're looking to produce really expensive pieces, really expensive product. I mean, to get a copy of the game, just the game pieces alone is going to cost you $40.
And it's not, I mean, there's the components really don't look like they should be that expensive.
No, they're going for really fancy, super high quality produced plastic pieces that are made up of like four different pieces all assembled together. They should have come at this using, you know, wooden tokens with print on them, you know. Right.
And I mean, that said, I'm sure it's going to be some quality stuff when It's just, it means you have to set the bar a little higher cost wise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I mean, to get a copy of the game included with a board and a box, you got to spend $50. And this game, if it was from a, you know, a large producer, should cost $20, you know, or less.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 20 would probably be the cap for a game like this, because really, it's kind of like buying a checker set.
Yeah. It should be that simple. So it's too bad, but it's a great idea. It's a really great idea. And I say it to, you know, kind of give these guys a shout out to say that, you know, hey, this is a cool thing. The design is beautiful. It's simple and clean lines and clean images. And I really, really like the way it looks. And I would love to see them come back at this another way, lower cost, a little more backer friendly, you know, to get something happening here.
And this is also a good example of a completely textless game.
Absolutely.
Just a board that just looks like a checkerboard.
Right.
And there are just these pieces that have arrows on them. And that is literally it.
That's all the information you have. And there are colors, but that just helps you keep your pieces separate from everyone else's.
And they did say that was by design. That's really what they wanted, was a very similar game.
Right.
You know, this reminds me of the 1,000-year game challenge. We've talked about that before. Solis does.
Absolutely.
A game like this would do very well in that, I would think.
It sure would.
Because it's got, it looks like high strategy, but pretty, you know, pretty, themeless to the point where, you know, 10 years from now, you wouldn't be like, oh gosh, this theme is lame.
Right. This game is tired and old. No. It's,
you could pick it up 10 years ago today or 20 years from now, and it would still feel like a normal game.
Still feel good. Yeah.
Assuming in 20 years, they still play with board games.
Yeah.
Gosh, I hope so.
I hope so. Yeah. So, I mean, we've also talked before about, you know, expensive games. I would love to back it, but $50 is too much for me. For a game that should only cost me 20, realistically. Anyway, I don't mean to rag on the game. It looks cool. It looks fun. I would love to play it. So anyway, Pivot, P-I-V-I-T. Find it on Kickstarter. We'll put a link in the show notes. Best of luck to those guys working on that. I hope that they can figure out another way to come at this that's a little more consumer friendly.
Or they can have a crazy ending and fun.
It's possible. I mean, yeah. And I think that's all we got for tonight.
I think so.
Okay, great. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the show. We appreciate it as always. You can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You know, go back and listen to some of our old shows. You know, we're, like I said, this is episode 33. We got some oldies and goodies back in there. Some of the early shows that are not available on iTunes anymore. We need you to come back to the website. Jason just recently adjusted the site so that it would be a little easier to access those old episodes. So check them out. Give them a listen.
Yeah, there's a spot you can go to called Episode List. You click that and it'll give you a hyperlink to every episode in order that we have currently out. And like Rob said, a lot of those aren't available on iTunes. iTunes only has the last 10. So.
Yeah, check it out. They're still totally free to listen to.
Yep.
Yeah. You can send us an email if you'd like to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Please send us email. We love email. We will promise we will read it on the air. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland and I am @poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook if you'd like, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We would love that too. We'll read your comments on there too, on the show, guaranteed. We promise. I think that's it, huh?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you again. Good night, everybody. We'll see you later. Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. Okay, we need some other garbage to put at the end of the show.
I like when you call our content garbage, by the way.
Well, the stuff we put at the end of the show is garbage. It's gold garbage. It's as if somebody put pure gold in the garbage. It's still garbage.